Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Are you ready for your next winter adventure? Whether it's a stylish all-wheel drive SUV to get the family where they need to go, or an innovative EV to make the switch to electric, ChevyDriveChicago.com has you covered. With Equinox, Traverse, Silverado, Trax, and Trailblazer, you're sure to find the perfect Chevy to match your needs and lifestyle. But finding the right car is only part of the story. Winter weather is here, and your vehicle needs to be ready for anything. From oil changes and tire rotations to unexpected repairs, your local Chevy dealer is here to help. Their team of experts knows your vehicle, and they will make sure your car is safe, reliable, and ready to handle whatever the season brings. So why wait? Head to ChevyDriveChicago.com today to find your local dealer, shop the latest vehicles, and schedule your service appointment. ChevyDriveChicago.com. That's ChevyDriveChicago.com.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Listening to the best of the Patriots.
Oh, yeah!
A weekly mix of WEEI's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
Tie Tuesday coming up in half an hour. Friday, we are at Bach Ferrari, Bach Exotics on the Auto Mile in Norwood. And it is our annual Toys for Tots show. Ernie and I have been doing this for 20 years. This is our 20th anniversary. Marines will be with us. I hope you will be with us. And Ernie said on this very show a few weeks ago that there are 20,000 reasons why you should be with us in order to celebrate 20 years. So I can assume what that means. I don't know what it means, but I would be there if I were you on Friday morning. Bring a new unwrapped toy or two for the Marines who will be with us. We will have breakfast. We will have gifts. We will have Santa. And we will have the great Rob Ninkovich with us talking football and other things on Friday morning.
And we will also have Munchkin from Gal's Best Pal. And I believe Mitch has a photo if you want a little sneak peek of Munchkin.
Of course I do, for Twitch and for YouTube. Of course.
For Twitch and YouTube, guys. Okay. Munchkin, last chance is what they said. It's Munchkin's last chance.
What do you mean? What does that mean?
That he's been in foster care and it's his last chance to find a forever home.
Oh, well, we are going on a stunning success rate when it comes to Pudge's Pals so far. I believe that two of the three have been adopted, and we're trying to get word on the third.
Right.
So.
Oh, Munchkin.
That's a handsome dog.
I mean,
Munchkin.
Yes.
Oh, look at Munchkin.
So Munchkin will be joining us on Friday as well.
Oh.
He's perfect.
He really is perfect. All right. So we'll have Munchkin there with us as well. That's Friday. Saturday, of course, the 11th annual Jingle All the Way 5K, and that's happening in the Seaport. And you will get, if you're there, to watch the master, Chris Curtis, at work, a very special Christmas edition of the Ken and Curtis Show on Saturday.
That's right. Can't wait. A week after I forgot Ken's birthday, we'll have a big party.
Yeah, well, I hope you're going to do so. That's your guy. I hope you're going to do something.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I do this. It makes his job easier because the show's doing 16, so you're welcome.
All right. We will have 2,000 whoopie pies from Boston Baking that are there that you can eat either before you run or after.
Ken, I got you a whoopie pie.
Not before.
There will be a Sweathouse cold plunge on scene. And the best of the best.
Have a good plunge.
And I'm looking forward to the Tito's hot chocolate bar, which will be outside at the Seaport.
Ken really owes me.
Why?
I'm going to miss all this and host because I'm hosting with Fitzy on Saturday. I want a whoopie pie and a cold plunge.
That's a brag.
Didn't Skinny Shime boldly declare that he would be running this year's Jingle All the Way?
Greg, that was my plan. And then work came a calling.
Right. Work is suddenly getting in the way.
I think this may be Ken doing you a solid, saying, you can't run, you have to work.
Curtis, if I didn't want to run, I would have faked an Achilles injury.
The Jingle All the Way starts at 10 a.m.
Okay.
You won't be on the air at 10 a.m.
No, I'll be on the air at noontime.
Correct.
Oh, that's 2 hours.
Yeah.
So that's 2 hours later.
I know, but I would be able to come and run and then not enjoy any of the after activities.
I want the cold plunge.
About the athletic endeavor for you.
But we also have a setup. Shime could likely stick around and just do it from where Ken and I are doing it.
Correct.
Fitzy is going to be remote anyways, probably.
Yeah. Double remote.
It seems weird. You're driving to the city anyway.
Is Brighton really the city?
Yes, Brighton is the city of Boston.
It's metro.
Okay, fair enough.
Is that what they call it?
It is a suburb of the city of Boston, correct. Therefore, you could just simply run your way through, I would imagine. What are you doing now? 10-minute miles?
Something like that. Nine-minute miles.
Nine and a half,
I think.
You'd be done in half an hour.
Come on, Shime. You could do it. You can do it.
All right. Hell, I'm in.
And then do remote from now on.
I have no problems doing it.
That sucks. Coming back from vacation, you haven't been training, clearly.
He don't need to train.
He walked 25 miles around London.
I mean, how hard is it to walk a 5K?
Oh, he's going to walk?
He said he's going to do it.
Yeah, a little combo.
Okay.
I mean, he's not trying to break any records. He's just there to support.
I think that's great.
The hot chocolate with the drink.
Somebody in the Twitch chat went and looked up the ice cream museum and says their comment is typical Seaport. It is $75 to get into the ice cream museum.
Wow.
Is that correct?
I did look it up. Jeez. I believe 72 is what it looks like for this week. I don't know if it's just because it's opening week.
I ain't paying no $72 to get in.
Seems like a lot of money.
But you get
all you can eat ice cream.
Yeah. I don't give a damn. I need some meat.
It seems like they have a diner now. I don't know if they only serve ice cream in different forms, but
in this economy, 72 beans?
That's
nope.
A lot of money.
That's a lot.
But everything costs a lot of money now.
Right, I understand that. But 72 beans for some ice cream? I mean, I told you, give me some meat before it. Maybe.
You can get an appetizer and a drink somewhere else for $75.
Get a nice little steak.
Maybe. This is Gene from Rhode Island. Hello, Gene.
Good morning, Greg. How are you? Hi, Courtney. How you doing, Wiggy?
Hi.
And all the gang there.
What's up?
Hi, everybody. I just wanted to say, I was disappointed in yesterday's game. I really wanted. I was hoping for a W.
Are you talking Celtics or you talking Sunday Patriots?
Patriots.
Okay,
Sunday's
game.
Sunday's game.
Yep.
And I was very disappointed because I thought they were going to get that field goal, and they were on a good run, and I got heartbroken.
Yeah, I lost money on that game.
When you say you thought they were going to get that field goal, are you talking about the 25-yarder or the six?
Yeah. Yep, the first one.
Yeah. I mean,
that's the first one.
That's all you needed to win that football game.
Right, but I always, I try not to do that with games.
Well, Gerard Mayo does it. Well, he does.
Right.
It's an odd peculiarity is that he always brings out what could have happened.
Right. I try not to do that because.
Why does he do that?
I think it's like, it goes back to like a lot of coaches that say, well, if we would have done this,
one or two plays, if they went differently.
We lost six games by less than 7 points.
To be fair, Bill said the same thing last year.
Yeah, Bill did say the same thing.
Yeah, did he?
Yeah, he said we lost like
I don't. Every time I bring up Gerard Mayo, it doesn't have to be compared to Bill Belichick.
No. I'm just saying, like, it's what coaches do. They retrospect to try and make excuses, and then they move forward.
If I were to give Gerard Mayo a single critique that I think has been most detrimental to the team since he became the head coach, is a lack of a feel. Like, there was a play in the game yesterday on Sunday where the Colts are hurrying up to the line, the Patriots, I think it was a 3rd-and-1, something like that.
Yes.
And in my living room, I'm saying, timeout.
Those guys never got to the line.
And it's
that's on Covington too, Curtis.
Oh, right, exactly. But it's just, there is a certain, you get the interception, you get the ball at the 48, you get and it's an opportunity to pounce.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether that's something you learn, right? So maybe he's got to have these growing pains when it comes to being a head coach. But he also doesn't have a feel for how to handle questions. And
it was interesting. Maybe it was wild how the importance that was placed on his answer on the Belichick question yesterday.
Right.
Did you feel like that was, I thought that so many people were bothered by that. Like, I didn't mind the way he answered it.
I liked the way he answered it. What would they have rather him said?
Right.
Like, that's what I don't get. Everybody can say that Gerard Mayo, you know, says a bunch of things and you don't actually get an answer. That was a clear answer. He takes back what he said because he was speaking while frustrated.
A better answer might have just been, there are some things. Like, why does he have to distance himself? Why is he trying to distance himself? Distance himself every 5 seconds from Bill Belichick.
Because he was responding to what I'm sure a lot of people felt, like Curtis yesterday, who said you can't distance yourself 1 week and then draw a comparison the next week.
Right.
That's why that was when he was saying I shouldn't have said it.
And he said he was wrong.
Yeah.
He said he
did. Do you have that exchange by any chance for those who may have missed it yesterday?
I think you've done a great job of being your own man. And it's something that we've credited you for, that a lot of people have followed certain coaches, and then they try to be that person. It was frustrating for me to hear you cite the Super Bowl at the Seahawks.
Yeah, I shouldn't have done that. You're right. Hey, look, I probably shouldn't. You know, when I said it, I was frustrated, first of all, which I should have taken a deep breath. I should not have said that. I should not have said it.
I agree.
Neutralized. Bam. hey, he didn't expect me to say, you know what, guys? You know what, guys? I should not have said that.
Yeah, you figured him out.
I shouldn't have said it. Then you're like, It was like I saw smoke coming out your ears. Look, I shouldn't have said it.
That was a good Curtis there.
But he's learning. Like, that's the. Let's go back to Bill's first year and listen to his press conferences and the things that he said. Like, Bill was a lot more vocal in the beginning of his career than he was at the end of his career.
Till he got burned.
He just was. Like, a lot of coaches, you don't think, even Dan Campbell, we clowned him for some of the stuff. Nick Sirianni, we clowned him for some of the stuff. So I think as coaches, just like players, your first year, you're learning a lot of stuff. We talk about Drake May. You're making mistakes. You're doing things.
Are you confident with Gerard when it comes to Drake May,
mm-hmm.
who is, I think, by every estimation, seems to have everything you need to be a really good quarterback in this league?
Mm-hmm.
Are you confident with Gerard Mayo handling the rest of his development?
But see, it's not Gerard.
Okay.
It's the coordinator, because remember, when you look at Belichick, it wasn't Belichick handling Brady necessarily. It was all the offensive coordinators, the guys that you put in charge to basically do the majority of the development of that position.
Okay. He's the CEO, though. Like, he's the guy who is running the show. Like,
right.
And so...
he's not technically the CEO.
Well...
I would say that isn't but Elliot Wolf more Elliot of the Wolf CEO? Is? Yeah, the CEO.
Who's the CFO?
I would say that
Robin.
Would, yeah.
Actually, I would say Elliot Wolf is the CFO and that Robert is the CEO.
All right, well, however you want to play it. The question should be, do you feel confident that Alex Van Pelt can develop and put the best game plan out there for Drake May to be successful?
See, I look at, if you look at Patrick Mahomes.
Yep.
You give a lot of credit, I assume, to his offensive-minded head coach, Andy Reid.
Because he's technically his coordinator.
That. Okay.
Yep.
But do you have that same confidence in your head coach when it comes to that side of the football to handle a Ferrari like Drake May is.
But it wouldn't be Gerard handling it. Okay. You can't use the comparison of Andy Reid.
All right.
Because Andy Reid is the offensive coordinator. You have to find a who's a...
D'Amico and C.J. Stroud.
Or, who'd you say?
D'Amico Ryans and C.J. Stroud.
Yeah, or I was going to say Dan Quinn and Jaden Daniels, where your head coach is the defensive-minded guy. Dan Quinn is a defensive-minded guy. The guy handling Jaden Daniels is Cliff Kingsbury. So,
and this is Wiggy's best example yet of how Brady was Brady, not because of Bill.
Yeah, it was more of what the coordinators were able to do. So do you feel confident? Now, if you would have said, did Gerard Mayo hire the right guy in Alex Van Pelt?
Well, you always tell me that he didn't.
I tend to believe he didn't, but
that's fine.
He says he does. Yeah. So let's just say... is Alex Van Pelt the right guy, in your opinion, to be able to get the best out of Drake May?
No.
And put the best game plan?
No, because he doesn't have enough experience.
And, Greg, can I just put a bow on the Gerard Mayo?
Whoa.
Okay, here we go.
But how much experience did Ben Johnson or Bobby Slowick have?
Okay, so he's the right guy in your mind?
No, I'm asking.
I would say it's different.
No, you don't get to just ask the question.
Okay.
I gave you my answer, and you went, whoa. What's
I'd
your
say
answer?
No, and oh, it's okay, not great. Because okay. he doesn't have experience because he's
it?
Been in the league
Why
long.
Why is it then?
I don't believe he's innovative enough to really have a great offensive system.
Okay.
So I think it's different when you're as old as Van Pelt is without a gig as opposed to a young and up-and-coming coordinator. I think those are different analogies. But, Greg, with Gerard Mayo, he told us that he speaks to the team through us, correct?
Yes.
That he talks to the media because he knows players listen to it. If you're going to talk to the media and then on a relatively regular basis, then speak again to the media to correct or rescind something you've said, wouldn't it stand to reason that the players aren't always going to be listening or taking you as seriously as you want?
Yeah, that could be an issue.
And I would say that that's that in the feel, and the feel I think is part of all of this, the feel for what should be said, when to say it. And he clearly was frustrated in London, and he called the team soft. He was frustrated yet on Sunday, and he brought up the Super Bowl.
He was frustrated when he said, once they go on the field,
right,
we can't, there's nothing we could do. And yeah. But I get it.
It's kind of like, I think it gives people the impression that you're waffling.
Yeah.
Like you say something that is meant to be motivational in a tough manner, and then you turn around and walk it back the next day because people are.
But that's the thing. Does he change next year? If he's still doing this next year, then there's a bigger concern because you haven't learned from some of your mistakes. That's why I tend to.
Do you want to waste another season?
I'm
wondering if that will be the case. I think that's where people.
But I see people who go, you need to move on from him. I think you're not giving somebody a fair opportunity.
I agree with you.
I think any organization that fires their coach after 1 year, unless the coach is just like an Urban Meyer who's just completely, you know, you could tell that. And I don't think Gerard has any of those things. I think that there's some mistakes that he's made. I think the players do respect him. And I think it's more about the talent that you don't have.
Yeah,
that's affecting.
Well, he's gonna be back. I mean, it's pretty clear. Like,
I believe the
crafts are.
I don't
kind of talking about that. The people,
right?
Saying
but where
he's
are all these rumors coming from?
Ground.
Then? Where are all these rumors coming from that Gerard's going
to
be?
No, I don't think they're rumors. I think there are, Wiggy, we did a poll. There are a majority of the, you have to face the facts.
Mm-hmm.
I know it hurts you.
No, I'm talking about whispers from.
There are a lot of, the majority of the fans don't believe he has what it takes.
Right. I'm not talking about that.
Based on what they've seen. I think people get bothered by the fact that he said you can't create a new culture in a year. Like, what?
Well, I'm talking about whispers from...
I think the whispers are simply people who are reading the tea leaves, seeing that tickets in the 200s are $25 on game day, that the interest is waning, the TV ratings are down, and there isn't faith in Gerard Mayo's ability to rebuild this organization by the fans. Whether they're right to have no faith or not, obviously they can be rewarded, and Bill Belichick... I was at a game in 2001 when you guys played the Chargers and were down 10 in the fourth quarter before Wiggy caught the tying touchdown pass. That stadium was brutal. The kids of Bill had to go up to the suite because the fans wanted him out of there.
Curtis, the whispers of, like, the people in the know, like the Tommy Currens, the Mike Giardis, like the whispers of there's a chance he could be on the hot seat.
There is a chance. I mean, I
and they're hearing
his record is going to be worse than Bill's, I would, or at least
the same.
Maybe the same.
Right.
With the very same personnel and
a
much better quarterback.
Right.
So I think you have to ask the question.
And, well, I'm not saying don't ask the question, I feel like they're getting, like, that Kraft might be burping into the ether. Maybe we do change the coach next year.
I think the narrative was we are taking our organization back. And we have found the right guy to lead it. And the question becomes, did you really end up finding the right guy? And if so, where are the results?
I have a Fitzy parody song, Greg.
Yes.
Silo, silo, it's off to work we go.
All right.
What do you think?
We got to take a break. But up next... We are re-gifting for you this holiday season. The first of the 12 days of Chris Curtismas. Highly recommend that you watch this on Twitch.
Oh, do not miss the gift.
Get ready to call because we have some good stuff for you, and we will every day in the lead up to Christmas here on WEEI.
Ah, can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hi, this is Dave Musial, owner of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric, with our biggest sale ever. Furnaces from $39 a month. Furnace and air conditioning combos from $59 a month. Plus 72 months interest-free financing and up to a $4,000 system rebate. Four Seasons guaranteed to beat any competitor's price by up to $1,000 guaranteed. So call today for your free in-home estimate and same-day installation.
For all the right reasons, call it 664-SEASONS.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+. And we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
A-U-D-A-C-Y. Type that into your app search, then download. Jones and Keefe.
On WEEI.
Greg Bedard discussing Gerard Mayo a year ago. What coaches on the offensive side of the ball? I wonder who didn't like Mayo a year ago.
Probably not here now.
No. No, I think he comes on this radio station, though, from time
to time. I think that's true. He might be a head coach at in the college ranks.
Yeah. College in Boston.
It does check out, though, because remember how it was sort of awkward at, like, the press conference when they were talking about coaches and replacements? I think it was the first Mayo Kraft one. They asked him about the offensive coordinator, and it's like, no, not him. It's like, who it is, I don't know, but it's not him. Basically, it's like, no, there will be a change. Remember, it was it was worded somewhat weirdly, which is kind of consistent with how the whole season has been with Mayo.
Yeah, we should have seen it coming.
But it was something like, which I thought was the right move, like to move on from Bill O'Brien. But like the way that it was worded, it was like, I don't know, is he so much worse at his job than you are at yours? Like, what are you doing?
I'm starting to wonder with Mayo if things are like even worse than we realize over there.
Possible.
Behind the scenes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because he was openly, just apparently flaunting that he knew he was the next head coach down the stretch. While Bill was still, while Bill was still coaching out
like
the
he
string.
Was Negan from The Walking Dead.
Yeah, he felt like he was above it all. He could do whatever he wanted. He's a made guy. I'm the next coach here. And obviously he did no thinking or planning about how he was going to coach this season.
No.
So like that rubbed people the wrong way. And then as Bedard tells it, and it's Jones and Kiefer on WEEI, you just heard the clip. As Bedard tells it, he'd get into these meetings and be like, we're good on our side.
Yeah, you guys are great.
Which, like, he's not even the coordinator.
No.
He's not even, you're not even the guy on that side of the ball.
The inside linebacker
it's
coach.
It's really Bill.
Yeah.
Bill's kid is the one calling the plays.
That's right.
And he's the one going, yeah, I don't know what you guys are doing, but we're good over here.
We're doing pretty great over here, guys.
Which is a joke.
Yeah.
And so I'm starting to wonder, it's bad.
That's like Sam Houser would be like, we're the best team in the league, aren't we, guys? We're doing pretty great, champions.
Right.
I don't even mean to take a shot at Sam Houser, but that's sort of the same thing.
Yeah, Sam Houser catching strays.
Yeah, my bad, Sam.
But the idea that it's really bad outwardly, like the record's really bad, the PR of it is a nightmare.
Yeah.
Mayo has to correct himself all the time. Then you get to cut some on the sideline doing nothing, and you're like, this is terrible. I wonder if it's worse in the building than we realize.
I think it's definitely possible. I mean, we'll see what happens, you know, because when things were getting a little hot, it's funny how we heard about, remember for like a 2-week span, we heard about the wide receiver coach.
Yep.
We're like, we're going to blame the wide receiver coach for this mess.
No, Van Pelt's been blamed. Tyler Hughes has been blamed. Marcus Covington has been blamed.
Rothstein's been blamed.
Rothstein is now getting blamed. Yes, good one.
Right.
Yes.
So like there's like these emerging kind of one-off scapegoats. Nobody's lost their job or anything. A few players have, but no, you know, no member of the coaching staff or whatever has. But if they finish the year 3-14... I can't imagine they're bringing everybody back. So it'll be interesting to see like who they put the blame on for this season.
Well, and how antsy are the Crafts? We talked about this yesterday. If Vrabel's really available this offseason, and he should be, is there a real chance they look at it and go, we should have brought in Vrabel last year. Somebody's going to hire him. This is our chance. Mayo's not working out. Let's go get Vrabel.
I think it's possible. I wouldn't bet on that. Like I think Mayo's back, but I think that I would open the door to that.
So how hands-on are the Crafts, though, after some of these games? Tommy Curran had a sit down with Jerod Mayo. I've heard a few of the clips. One of them he said basically echoed something he said earlier in the year. I suck right now, guys, but the biggest leap for a player is year one to year two. I'll be way better next year.
Definitely.
Which keep your fingers crossed he'll be back. Definitely. You know, Tyquan Thornton got so much better year one to year two.
So they might go from 3 to 5 wins?
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
Four is better.
Four.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like Jalen Polk looks bad as a rookie, but he's going to be really good next year. That's basically what Mayo's
best
saying.
Best hands in the league.
So this other clip, though, I've read. I've not fully heard it, so I'm curious how it sounds. But this is a sit-down that Tommy Curran had with Jerod Mayo about the Crafts and how involved they are after some of these games.
How does it go after a game? Do they say,
I set this up poorly. Time out. This might have been your question that you asked to Curran that he turned around and asked to Mayo. Listen to this question.
How do you like that?
Listen to this.
How does it go after a game? Do they say, why didn't you go for two? Is it that blunt, or what was the thought process?
We always debrief the games, and they're very, they just want to know at least my thought process. And they absolutely, just like the fans, sometimes don't agree with the way that the game is going. You know, obviously when you lose games, the questions are plentiful.
Pointed.
Very pointed. That's right.
Plentiful.
That's right. And again, though, as the head coach, like, I have to be able to answer those questions. And my job is not only to protect the coaches, but also protect the players. And that's why I try to take 100% accountability.
This is all on me, guys.
Does he take 100% accountability?
He does not.
I don't think so at all.
No.
Not even close.
I don't think so.
How about that? So the Crafts are peppering him after all these games. They're like,
good.
Why didn't you? No, I mean, yeah. I agree. Good. But that can't be a good thing. You're getting called in after every game and going, why didn't you go for two?
Yeah.
Why were you running the ball here? Why weren't you doing X, Y, and Z?
To make a long season longer.
That doesn't sound like a coach who's on firm footing.
But you know, yesterday we were bringing up just the, you know, the owners in the city and how obviously Kraft and Henry, there's a lot of similarities, like a lot of winning, but then also a lot of like non-spending. One thing that's very different about the two, like if after every game Kraft is like, why'd you do this?
Yeah.
Does John Henry even know what the record is
of
the team?
That's a good point.
But I'm not trying to like prop Henry? Up Kraft for that. I'm just saying, like, hey, if you care that much about it, wouldn't you also invest more money in it?
Right.
Whereas like Henry's like, I don't know, what did we get this month from the Penguins, from Liverpool, from NASCAR, from the Red Sox? Let's look at that. I don't think he's like, hey, Alex Cora, why did you take out, you know,
no,
Chris Martin when you did?
I don't think so.
I don't
either.
Think he knows any of the players.
Yeah.
Whereas like Kraft obviously is at every game or just about at every game and clearly cares. So like if you think there's a chance where maybe there could be change, like that's what it would have to be. It would have to be an owner who is really into it and like wants to know why you're making these decisions.
So some of the other coaches, at least a year ago, and Bill's one of them, it sounds like Bill O'Brien was another, if I had to read between the lines, didn't like Mayo. His bosses now, after all these losses, are coming in and asking him, why'd you do X, Y, and Z?
And I can't imagine after every one of those. So there's been, what, 10 losses already?
Uh-huh.
So I can't imagine after every loss, they're like, oh, that's a good reason.
Yeah.
No. Hey, why didn't you go for two?
Well, he's so good.
Oh, we thought we were going to go for overtime.
He's so good explaining it in front of the media, Keith, when he's had time to think about it. Imagine how he is when he's getting peppered by his bosses.
Does a great job.
So
yeah.
Does that sound like a guy who's back? I mean, to me, not really. Yeah. And I think it was noteworthy. I'll keep reiterating. I think it was noteworthy. Curran told us earlier this week he thinks Elliot Wolf is on firmer ground than Jerod Mayo.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a noteworthy adjustment from Tom Curran. 617-779-7937. You can jump in here on Jones and Keefe. We will get into the Bruins. The Bruins Thursday, they've won 3 in a row under Joe Sacco. They've won 6 out of 8 under Joe Sacco. Is that proof they made the right call by firing Jim Montgomery? That's next.
That was Drake May post-game. Patriots lose 25-24 to the Colts at Gillette Stadium. And joining us now on the line here at Gillette Stadium, Patriots Monday, is Drake May. Drake May is brought to you by Northeast Men's Health, the experts in treating men's sexual health with 5 New England offices, or at northeastmenshealth.com. And by Cardi's Furniture and Mattress, get next day delivery with removal and disposal at Cardi's Furniture and Mattresses. Drake May, how are we feeling on this Patriots Monday after what you called was a heartbreaking loss yesterday?
Yeah, it was a tough one for sure. So, hey, we still got some football left to play the rest of the season, and I got a chance to reset in the bye week.
You've mentioned the need for a win quite a bit, even before you took over as the starting quarterback, and they've been tough to come by. And I'm gonna assume this is the most you've ever really lost in your athletic career. So, how are you dealing with losing? Is it wearing on you, or how exactly is that playing out in these recent weeks?
Yeah, it's frustrating. I think the biggest thing is just motivational. I think it's motivational to come back and you know, study hard or kind of get something in small group meetings or, hey, meet with receivers more, meet with the O-line more, talk through more looks, little things like that, because we're just a few plays away from, I think, being on the right side of things. And I think, you know, those guys see that and they're not losing sight of that.
So, obviously, it wasn't Buffalo-level cold yesterday out here, Drake, with feet of snow in the stadium and fans having to shovel out their own seats. But it was pretty chilly yesterday. I'm curious how you, as you continue to acclimate to New England and us New England people and the environment out here. Well, I saw you out there without an undershirt yesterday. You know, kind of went with the sun's out, guns out. How'd you feel about the cold weather, and what do you think about playing in those conditions?
Yeah, I don't think it's big, you know, really that big a deal. I think it could be an advantage for us, you know, down the road. But yeah, I think it's New England. It's part of New England football. It's part of New England history. All those games they won in the cold weather. So felt good in the first half. Got a little chilly in the second half, but it really didn't affect me that much. I felt like I was throwing the football well. So the biggest thing is probably the hits hurt a little more. That's probably about it.
Yeah, Tom Brady was famous. He used to wear like this neoprene scuba suit whenever it would get to be like 25 degrees and colder. So you were out there, no extra layers.
He's tougher than Tom Brady.
That's right. That's what we're giving to your props, Drake. You're tougher than Brady out there.
No, I don't know about that. I probably need a scuba suit on. Probably if Tom did that. So
I know it probably doesn't make you feel better because you did lose in the end, but it seemed like a pretty efficient day for both you and the overall offense. Did you feel like, for you in particular, that was maybe your cleanest game that you have played?
I think, you know, there's been multiple times this year. I thought we've been moving the ball well. I think the Rams were moving the ball well. Well, we have one punt yesterday, but down in the red zone, I think it's just it's tough to go out like that. You can't win games. You know, like I said, my press conference, you know, going 4 drives in the red zone and then field goals. So, we got to focus in on that. I think that's been an emphasis of an area of improvement for us in this offense, and we know that you guys score touchdowns to win in this league. So I feel like clean day overall. I think the interception was unfortunate. Got to probably give it, put it on the better side of Hunter, and you know, he may end up, you know, falling in. So other than that, I think, you know, proud of the guys for how they fought, and thought we moved the ball well.
Drake, the bye week can be a great time for, in addition to resting up and healing up, reflection. So you get a chance to turn around and look at your 8 starts and how the team has done through 13 games overall. You got 4 left to complete your first season in the NFL. Do you feel like you are where you should be, or do you feel like you have progressed to a point where you're actually further along than you thought you would be 8 games into your rookie season? You feel like you still have a lot more work to do. How do you feel about the progress you've made thus far in your rookie campaign?
Yeah, I think it's tough to, you know, answer that from, you know, talking about myself from myself point of view. I'm just trying to take it one day at a time, one game at a time, and I'm trying to learn from experiences or negative plays, and learn from turnovers, learn from sacks that I take, and see if I can get the ball out or do something better. So that's probably the biggest thing. I think, but you know, hopefully, kind of the work we're putting in and what we're putting out on the field, the product we're putting out, can lead to some positive plays and positive wins down the road. But I think we got something to play for in these last 4 games. You know, I think, you know, playing for the New England Patriots as starting quarterback is always an awesome opportunity. So hopefully, if not, maybe knock off, you know, some teams and maybe hurt their chances of making the playoffs. That's about, you know, what our chances are right now, and you know, take advantage of that and take that as a challenge.
We've obviously talked about your running ability throughout the weeks that you've been playing and starting, and you've talked about picking your spots and staying healthy and things of that nature. You had that big run early yesterday where looked like you got them in man coverage and you were kind of well downfield before half the defensive backs knew even what was going on. Does that play into your decisions on when you run and how aggressively you run if they're in man and you see that opportunity where maybe they're kind of run off there?
For sure. Anytime you get, you know, man coverage and, you know, they don't account for the quarterback running the football, you can hurt them. And I think that was a good, you know, example from Sunday. And you know, the other times, you know, scrambles is trying to, you know, do what I can and get down. I think trying to be efficient with my running is probably my biggest kind of goal, and not run too much. But when I do run, kind of make it count.
We're talking to Patriots quarterback Drake May here with Fitzy and Hart on WEEI Afternoons. Drake, so I read a stat that was kind of an eye-opener on the subject of your running, that you have the best yards per carry by any running quarterback since the year 2000, and there have been some pretty good running quarterbacks in the NFL since 2000 to now. If you're getting ready for a game, kind of like the way Marcus Jones texted Alex Van Pelt a while ago to see if he could get a play from moving over from defense to offense, if you're feeling it and you think you may have it coming up on a Sunday, would you feel comfortable sending him a text or suggesting, hey, maybe, you know, I feel like toting the rock a little more this Sunday?
I think it's different with Marcus. Kind of, you kind of, a package for him is different. Kind of telling him the day before to, you know, kind of let me tote the rock, just kind of set plays up throughout the week. So I think, you know, Coach Van Pelt does a nice job of kind of letting those plays happen for me when they do. And I think that can kind of almost make it kind of more advantageous, you know, for the defense of not knowing when to expect it, or, hey, you know, they're not a QB run team, but you got to be ready for it.
In terms of the way the game ended yesterday, you guys execute an interesting sort of situation there to at least get the opportunity for either a Hail Mary or what would have been a record-setting field goal. I'm assuming you would have felt comfortable throwing the ball, whatever it would have had to have been, 58, 60 yards into the end zone. Is that a club you have in your bag, and would you have been excited to get that opportunity?
Yeah, I think anytime you're on the 50, you know, midfield, yeah, man, if you can't make that throw in the NFL, I'm not sure you should be in the NFL. So, we had a chance to Hail Mary, but like I said, Joey felt like, and the special teams coordinator and Coach Mayo, was ready for whatever the team decided. But, yeah, if you can't probably make a Hail Mary for 50 yards, that you may be playing the wrong sport.
And what was your vantage point of the kick? Because from where I was watching, when Joey struck that, I thought I was seeing history. I thought I was going to see a crazy ending and a victory for you guys. When he hit it, did you think there was a shot you were going home victorious?
Yeah, it looked like I had a chance. And I think, you know, it's always tough, you know, watching a game-winning field goal or, you know, a game-losing field goal on either side of it. So,
thought I had a chance, and you know, ended up coming just short. But I think it was pretty impressive. And that, you know, cold weather probably affected a little bit. I'm not sure what the wind was. It was pretty windy at times. But yeah, I think you know, it was. I think it ended up kind of helping the point of you know at least you know making it close and you know and not you know being 10 yards short. That would have been you know, more of a bad look.
Drake, on the subject of arm strength, Hail Marys, et cetera, I want to ask this one for the fans. There was a video that had gone viral during your time at UNC that a lot of Patriots fans immediately shared after you were taken third overall last April. I think you did it last year at UNC where you're hanging around with a buddy. It's very sunny outside, and you chucked the ball 80 yards, and it hit the goalpost. Was that real, or were there some special effects involved in that?
I don't know if I remember that. What was the video of?
There's an Instagram video of you and one other dude on a field, and you stand around the 20-yard line or 25-yard line, and you absolutely haul one off. And I think the ball travels approximately 80 yards or so, and then it hits like you guys were targeting the goalpost, like the bottom of the goalpost. Do you remember that one?
Where was I at?
Outdoors.
Outdoors. Nah. Yeah. Maybe if I saw it, but 80 yards is a stretch, but depends on how I'm feeling that day. I think with some adrenaline flowing, but I can definitely feel like I can throw pretty good. So
getting back to some of the situational stuff, as you guys continue to evolve as an offense, where do you think you are in terms of, like, spacing and consistency and route running and things of that nature? Because I know a lot of people talked about your touchdown throw to Hooper where Jalen Polk was kind of right behind Hooper at the goal line there, and there was some question as to who you were even throwing to. Take us through that play. I'm assuming you were throwing to Hooper, your tight end, for the touchdown. And, B, how is that going in terms of the spacing throughout play-to-play, rep-to-rep?
Yeah, I think any offense, you know, I think there's times and play calls where, you know, they probably want to, you know, wish they had, you know, spacing better or kind of be in the right spot, in a better spot for the football. But, yeah, that played up the hoop. I think it was a pretty simple, you know, who I was throwing it to. I think I haven't seen what Polk did yet. I may have fell off it trying to think it was a little underthrown, but, now Hoop made a nice grab and that was the intent.
Yep. You threw an 83-yarder in the home stadium, by the way. I looked it up while Andy asked you a question. You hit the crossbar. 83 yards. Man, that's how about that? Drake, yesterday also was kind of special talking about the initiative undertaken NFL-wide in weeks 13 and 14 as well, the My Cleats, My Cause effort. You had some pretty special cleats. I watched a very emotional video last week on YouTube that the Patriots put together about your work with the Massachusetts Special Olympics and the Special Olympics Games. Could you tell us a little bit about how you got involved there?
Yeah, I think it was awesome. You know, I think you know, the Pats came to me and with Special Olympics and United Healthcare, and I think it was an awesome, you know, opportunity to, you know, shine a light on their team and, you know, especially two you know, specific athletes, Nick and Brett. You know, I did a practice with them out on the field, actually our practice field, earlier before the season, and it was just awesome to kind of see the smile that, you know, I put on their face and that they put on mine. So just a great cause, and it was an awesome chance for me to wear the cleats that they designed and wrote their signatures on it. So it was a pretty sweet deal, and, you know, glad for, you know, Special Olympics and kind of shine the light towards, you know, athletes that may not get it and that deserve it.
How much do you embrace those opportunities? Because obviously being a franchise quarterback's a tough job. You get a lot of criticisms, wins, losses, that whole thing. But you know, it gives you a platform. It gives you opportunities to do these kinds of things off the field. And how much do you embrace that and appreciate that?
No, I think that's one of the best things and one of the coolest things. You know, we're talking about that in chapel, actually. With our Captain Jewel earlier this week on Friday about our platform and spreading faith and, you know, what awesome opportunity we have as Christians and, you know, myself to spread faith. And I think it's just, you know, different ways, you know, through the community of spreading different things. And, you know, just something like that can go a long way for somebody in their life, or you never know what, you know, who may see it and impact them.
Any great plans you got for the bye week? Obviously a couple of, well-deserved and earned days off. Special restaurant you're going to eat at, a little travel, maybe, I don't know, go to the movies, see Gladiator 2 or Wicked.
Yeah, I haven't decided really yet. I think, you know, got We're in the building tomorrow, so we'll get back to work on Tuesday and probably get back to check out Arizona maybe a little bit, but you know, really resetting the bye week.
All right, that brings us to the quarterback question of the week. The quarterback question of the week is brought to you by Northeast Men's Health, the experts in treating men's sexual health with 5 New England offices or at northeastmenshealth.com. It comes from Billy in Brockton, and Billy wants to know, do you have any nicknames or have you had nicknames growing up throughout your career in sports?
Yeah, kind of growing into high school. People started calling me Draco. I've been called Drizzy by a lot of people. Probably Draco or Drizzy is what probably I really get called the most in the locker room nowadays. So,
any new ones since you got here?
Whatever I prefer. Yeah, same thing. Drizzy and Draco in the locker room. Some people call me 10. Some people call me just Drake. So,
10? That's not very creative.
Draco and Drizzy.
I like that one. That's probably my favorite.
Oh, really? Okay.
He's a football guy. People call him 10. He's proud to wear number 10.
Well, that's going to do it here on a Patriots Monday with 10 coming off one of his best performances of his young rookie season. Drake May, appreciate the time, and whatever you decide to do, enjoy the bye week.
Sounds good. Appreciate y'all. Marcus.
Thanks, guys.
Good chatting with you, Drake. Drake May. Wow. See, I told you.
I like Drizzy.
I like Drizzy Drake. Drake Drizzy. Draco Drizzy.
Drizzy 10.
Oh, yeah, cozy Drizzy. I knew he threw that. I knew he could, like, you could tell.
You know how badass you are when you don't remember when you threw the ball 83 yards to brag to a friend that you could hit the goalpost?
Right.
That's how badass you are.
Could you not tell?
If you did that, you would never shut up about it. It would be tattooed on your breast.
Are you kidding? Are you kidding? So would you.
No.
Oh, get out of here, Uncle Rico, with that garbage. Listen.
83 yards. He's like, oh, I'm not really sure which time.
When he was like, if you can't throw the ball 50 yards on a Hail Mary, you shouldn't be in the NFL.
Somewhere Mac Jones was like,
shots fired. Shots fired.
He was that Cam Newton sliding off the bench and getting
they
on out of here.
They didn't even let him do that. Like, they never even let a good old let him McCorkle one down the field.
He
threw it 83 yards in 2023. Our producer Dan sent it to us in the chat. During the conversation with Drake, which was fun.
10, yeah. Drizzy.
83 yards and it hit the goalpost and didn't even have to, like, really get a running start.
And
he's got a cannon.
He knows he does. And we're talking about his throwing arm. He knows he does. And the Patriots fans, you lost a game 25-24. Hurt a little bit yesterday. You have 3 wins in December. That hurts a little bit. But when I look at Christian Gonzalez and Drake May, they have a quiet cockiness to him that is the foundation of not just the playmaking moving forward, but I believe the identity of this football team. We keep talking about the identity of the football team and where they're going to go.
Gerard Mayo is brought to you by Northeast Men's Health, the experts in treating the sexual health issues of men with 5 New England offices or at northeastmenshealth.com. By Land Rover of Norwood, by John Sewer and Drain Cleaning, the name to know when your drains won't flow, and by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. You can purchase Hellman's at your local Walmart or grocery store to add extra deliciousness and creamy flavor to your game day dishes this football season. Hey, Coach. Great discussion during the break, by the way. Wiggy expected that you would walk in here and be on his side.
When it comes to
planting the flag.
Right again.
And you are not. You believe.
Yeah, if you're an underdog and you win on the road in a rivalry game, like, what's wrong with that? What's wrong with planting the flag?
Let's just change all rivalry games to plant the flag game. Whoever wins can plant the flag.
I'm not missing the point.
What's the point?
The point is, if you're an underdog on the road in a rivalry game,
okay,
it's a big deal.
Yeah, and have some class. Win with
the classless
class.
Part is punching someone with a helmet.
No, no, no.
Thank you.
Also,
thank
dumb.
You. The yeah. classless part is going up to the middle of the field and planting your flag. You won. Take your dub like a man. And have
take
some
like
have some
man.
Respect for your
all right. Go
your
to your
opponent.
Locker room and lose, and don't go on the field.
No,
let's
no.
talk about
because you
Patriots.
Know it's gonna lead.
Talk about
you
the
know
Patriots.
What it leads. Gerard, you know better than anything I do. You know what that leads to? Fists getting thrown.
Yeah, with helmets and shoulder. Who's really getting hurt? The person throwing the punch is probably going to get hurt before the person
with
the helmet.
Not everybody.
On.
Sometimes a helmet gets pulled off.
Well, there you go. Then
somebody's getting a black eye.
So, all right.
Have you had a black eye during a game?
No. I've
Has anyone ever tried you like that and, like, punched you dead in your eye?
No one's ever tried.
Exactly. I hope the questions are about football today. I'm going to punch you dead.
I'm going to take you right out.
Now, here we go. Let's do it.
Well, listen, in that game till the end, we were talking about it before you came, and really from our perspective, the outside perspective, it's being, you know, again, in scoring position, and you got penalties and you're unable to convert.
Yeah, to me, the game came down to red area. Defensively, we're poor. Offensively, we're poor in the red area. We walk away with no points on the field goal. And we have to that is the NFL. And this is why I continue to try to tell the guys, like, this is the NFL. We've been in 7 one-score games. 7 one-score games. And we have to find a way to get over the hump and win those games. And, yeah, I got to do a better job.
And you say you have to do a better job. When you look at the situation penalty-wise and these guys holding, is there anything – I mean, is that a pure disadvantage talent-wise and that's their only option? Is that coaching? Like, what?
Yeah, I'm not going to get into that. What I will say is the week prior, it was the operational pre-snap penalties, which are just totally focused concentration type of penalties. Look, we're in the NFL. Like, there will be times where it's holding or, you know, someone's out there with poor technique and it's pass interference, like on the pass play to Jelani. Look, the first time we had this crew was the first Miami game, and there were 10 holding calls between the two teams. So we went into the game knowing, like, these refs, they're going to call holding. And that's the most frustrating part for me, because once it does happen, it's like, all right, let's fix it. They're, obviously, you can call them ticky-tack or not ticky-tack. Like, we need to be able to adjust in the game and do business is being done.
Well, when you say do a better job, like, you know, especially in the red zone, do you think it's more about play selection, maybe being, and I don't want to use the word aggressive, but just maybe play selection when it comes to offensively and having that many opportunities, or is it more about we had the right play on, but it was poor execution by the players?
Yeah, look, to me, it's everyone. Like, we can say, you know, play selection, we can say execution. The field gets shorter, as you know, the lower you get down. So now that safety that was in the middle of the field, you know, you were able to, you know, take him out of the game. He's now part of the game, both in the run game and the pass game. And we have to get a hat on a hat and score touchdowns. And we just weren't able to do that. And I would say defensively, we weren't able to stop them.
Positives-wise, I would say the biggest positive was your total yards on offense, 422, the most since 2022, I believe, for you guys. Is that Drake May and his ability to just get the ball out there but also take off with his legs? And is that AVP making sure that Drake is improving every week?
Yeah, I would say a combination of the two. I think Drake's getting better every week. I talk about him not being a repeat error guy. I would also say, you know, just as we sit up here and when we're not able to run the ball, we say, well, it starts up front. Now we run the ball for 200 yards, and it starts up front. And I would say that Layden, was it perfect? No. But he went out there and played his tail off and had some big blocks for us, and that's part of it. And I know, look, we all want to sit here and, you know, look, Drake is a good player, and he will be a good player. He'll get better as we go on. But there are other young players that – have to take those steps, and I would say Layden took a step. Now, hopefully, we can continue on that trajectory going forward.
You had said after the game that, you know, you thought about calling a timeout before the 2-point conversion, or even on that drive, the 19-play drive by the Colts.
If we would have taken, you know, when I went back and watched it, and this was part of the conversation too, if we would have taken our timeouts on that final drive, we would have got the ball back with, it was a 7-play drive or something like that, we would have gotten the ball back with like 5 seconds and no timeouts. And so it did give us an opportunity to, at the end of the game, still have a chance. But go ahead.
So I think you've done a great job of being your own man, and it's something that we've credited you for, that a lot of people have followed certain coaches and then they try to be that person. It was frustrating for me to hear you cite the Super Bowl with the Seahawks.
Yeah, I shouldn't have done that. You're right. And look, and this, I probably shouldn't. You know, when I said it, I was frustrated, first of all, which I should have taken a deep breath. I should not have said that. I should not have said it.
Yeah.
Neutralized. Bam. Hey, he did not expect me. He didn't expect me to say, you know what, guys? You know what, guys? I should not have said that.
Yeah, you figured him out.
I shouldn't have said it. Then you're like, It was like, I saw smoke coming out your ears. Look, I shouldn't have said it. I shouldn't have said it. And we all make mistakes.
Honestly, I have not had anybody agree with me in 5 years.
I know.
That
I know.
That's not true. We just agreed that know, the planning true. Of the flight. Yeah, two times agreed. In a day.
Gerard, you're my man.
Well, at least we got like some insight on, because our biggest conversation was, you know, the reason why you didn't call your timeouts. And part of our conversation was the fact that we felt like you wanted to have enough time offensively, which you did, and put yourself in a position that would have been a history
and
making field goal.
But yeah, but I would also say, Joey, I know he missed a short field goal during the game, but pregame is always big, especially with specialists. And he was booming them in pregame, and I felt like that gave us the best scenario. I think, you know, since like 2014, you know, I think it's 1-11 as far as kicks like that. Mm-hmm. Same thing with Hail Marys. Like, what is it, 1 out of 12, 1 out of 10. I don't know. I just felt like that was the best thing to do.
That short pass for Drake, were you guys hoping to get a little bit closer than 67 yards out?
Yeah, that's why we ran it. You know, you run the slants because they're playing off. You run the slants, and I thought Hunter and the quarterback did a good job getting the ball out and getting down. Like, that's part of the situations that we go over every day.
Speaking of Hunter Henry, how's there not a helmet to helmet when it comes to
You know, I asked the referee about that, and, you know, he said it wasn't helmet to helmet. His screws didn't line up exactly like a transformer. Like, yeah. All right, penalty.
Yeah, I mean, man, I realize he wasn't defenseless, but it's still
he was a runner.
But it's still helmet to helmet.
It's a bang bang.
If we're gonna talk about penalties, I mean, Christian Barmore after the game, the 2-point conversion try. I mean, you do want, if you say that this is a crew that calls a lot of holding, there was a pretty obvious one of the biggest play of the game.
I thought so too, but. Well, I'm not going to get fined.
Yeah, on this show. We'll pay it for you.
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah. Greg will pay it.
Hellman's, help us out, Hellman's. Will Hellman's pay for it?
Hellman's mayonnaise. I can make that commitment. Going forward, Hellman's will pay all of your fines.
And it's recorded.
Or we'll get Land Rover of Norwood.
I love referees. But really, like, they're in a difficult position, too, especially as it comes down to the end of games like that.
Yeah, and listen, you won the challenge. I mean, went your way. So I
the other one. You know, go ahead and bring up the other one. No, I could have challenged on the drive.
Yeah, we've
been together way too long at this point. I know exactly what you guys are going to
say. You know what we're going to ask. All right. Yeah.
But on that play, I didn't get a clear shot of it. You know, on that one that I know some people think I should have challenged. I didn't get a clear shot of it, and I would say, you know, the 49ers, we lost that challenge. Last week, we lost that challenge, and I would say this guy had his hands under the ball more than those guys did.
Right? Yeah.
And so.
Yeah.
Jabril Peppers playing in the game. When did you guys make that decision that he was going to not only be back at practice but be playing in the game?
We just had to see what he looked like in practice. And, again, he came off the commissioner's exempt list and was ready to go.
And I feel like watching that, my first reaction immediately after the game was the Colts approach is what we have been longing for this team, which is balls to the wall, go for two, whether it was the Titans game or otherwise. I feel like that is what – I don't know whether, you know, we'll go back in time here, but – I feel like a lot of Patriots observers want that from you, which is let's try and win every game. If we lose, whatever. We're all trying to get better.
Yeah, I'm always – look, I will say, like, you know, we talk about the one-score games and the – you know, once you start going for it on every fourth down or going for two here, that's when you get those real blowouts. And so what I would say is I'm trying to do the best job that I can with the team that we have right now, and that's through taking care of the football – going out there, playing with good fundamentals. And I understand the frustration of go for two, don't go for two. I understand it 100%. But at the same time, I'm coaching this team here in the present, and also we're trying to build a foundation going forward.
Well, yeah, our guy Shime back at the station had some coaching critiques this morning. That's Shime, I don't know if you want to bring any of those up.
No, it's fine. Like, I mean, look, that's what the game is. And these questions that come up are symptoms of losing. They're symptoms of losing football. If we would have won the game, then the critiques would have probably been a little bit different.
Yeah.
I just have a question for general knowledge. Who is your Ernie Adams in game?
You just stole my Hellman's question of the week right out from under me.
How would I?
let me tease it. You can purchase Hellman's at your local Walmart or grocery store to add extra deliciousness and creamy flavor to your game day dishes this football season. And not only is
lack of communication. Oh, yeah. I know what that's like.
We got to blow a timeout here.
Not only is Curtis asking, but Boomer Esiason was asking this morning who you're on headsets with.
I'm on the headsets with all the coaches. Look, I don't want to get into comparisons about Ernie or anything like that, but I do have a channel that I go to with Evan, and we have a conversation. And ultimately, it's my decision. And so all the coaching critiques, like, should go to me and not anyone else. Like, all of those plays, go for two, not go for two, like, that's all 100% me.
Gerard, when you're in that last situation, right, because as I'm watching.
Can I ask a question?
Go ahead. You can ask whatever you need.
Hey, so if we were losing, look, losing stinks regardless. If we were losing games by, let's just say, 21 points a game versus being in the games at the end, and I understand we've lost those games, like, which is better? It's losing football.
Yeah. So you're saying it doesn't matter.
No, what I'm saying is we have to be able to control the ball. We have to go out there and play, you know, fundamentally sound. And I'm not going to say conservative or anything like that, but you're playing, you're coaching and also playing to have a chance at the end of the game. Because we know the one-score games, like, that's what the NFL is.
Well, it's also probably you don't have the track meet offense where if you're down 10, 15 points in the second half, it's not a team that likely is going to come back.
I'm just saying.
In other words,
No. I mean,
you've gotten better at not answering this.
Yeah. No, for sure. For sure. And I've learned not to talk about hypotheticals.
Can somebody get Stacey out of here?
but my thing is, like, you know, going back, let's go back. You know, like, even the two-point conversion. Hold on, let me get finished.
Okay, go ahead. I'm going to tell you why it's frustrating for fans. But go ahead, tell me. No, I want you to finish.
Nope.
No, I think it's frustrating because you are in these games, and short of penalties, you would win these football games, I think, and that's got to be really frustrating for you as well.
It is very frustrating, and look, we're doing everything we can to try to get better.
You know,
we have a bye week. We're going to do a lot of reflecting and things like that. We'll practice a couple of days and, you know, hopefully try to string some games together.
Yeah.
Well, here's no hypotheticals. Just take me through and the fans. First and goal, it's Colts run, and now it's the fourth and goal situation, and the mindset of what defensive play call. Is there a call to maybe put pressure on them, or are you expecting, another run? Like, what's the whole mindset when they run, you know, basically first and goal, and now it's a fourth down situation defensively, to be a little bit more aggressive or maybe to play a little bit more zone coverage?
No, it's a good question. I would say before we even get to that point, they converted 3 fourth-down conversions on that drive.
Yep.
So, look, we make any one of those plays and the game has changed. And then earlier in the show, we talked about the Barmore situation. And so, look, it comes back to defeating the person across from you and making the play, and we just didn't do that.
All right. How was Thanksgiving?
It was good. You know, it's always good to be around family. And look, I'm thankful for a lot of things. And I said it. I'm thankful for the opportunities, like, to coach this football team. I'm thankful to be here with you guys. I mean, I could be doing something else, and I'd rather be here with you guys.
Yeah, well, we
appreciate it. Sponsored by Hellman's Mayo.
Brought to you by Hellman's.
But what I will say is, look, we will get better. We will get better. We feel like we have a good piece at the quarterback position, and now it's about just getting better and putting a better product out there for the fans. They deserve more, and
that'll
be better.
That run he had yesterday was exciting. Yep. I mean, he's really, really good.
You used to do that in high school?
Yeah, I did. If I got off the bench.
In his dream.
He was actually running after Hellman's.
There you go.
Is that when you – do you start – I know you're probably going to tell me you don't get ahead of yourself, but when you kind of look toward – we've talked a lot with you about the roster. When you look toward what this team needs – is there an area that you say is your number one focus? Is it offensive line? Is it getting him the weapons he? Because I know you think about it.
Yeah, I do think about it, and I would also say that's part of, you know, this week for me. Like, as much as you want to go on a beach and chill out, like, we just don't have time to do that from a coaching or from a scouting perspective. And so this time is for us to reflect and kind of address those questions that you just have.
And Gerard, last one for me, because you had said you're constantly learning and you're constantly trying to grow as a coach. What are the things that you look at and you go, all right, maybe I shouldn't say this, or sometimes I get frustrated and I say this, and it like when you start to reflect there. Are you, like, kind of working your way through? Because a lot of it is, like, media-related. Like, so is a lot of the stuff that you're working your way through saying, I got to approach things differently because sometimes I may say something that I believe, but it gets taken out of context.
Yeah, my main concern has always been the guys in that locker room.
Mm-hmm.
Now, look, you guys can take comments that I've said. and make them look like whatever you want. But to me, like most kingdoms, you know, are taken down within. And my job is for us not to be divisive, but to come together, especially when there's so much noise and chatter on the outside.
Were you able to watch that that Jaguars game and the Trevor Lawrence hit?
Yeah, it was unfortunate. You know, anytime you see a guy go into that type of posture, it's always a scary moment for everyone. So thoughts and prayers out to Trevor and his family and the team.
What? Sorry.
You're over here looking at pictures.
Well, Rob Ninkovich wants to know who's nose whistling on the microphone. Me, you, or Wiggy?
It's not me for sure.
Probably me. I got a little bit of a runny nose for some reason. And I can't catch it. Yeah. I can't catch it, Rob. I'm trying to put my mic up when
it's
I have
a little red, too, your nose.
Ninko, yeah. get a job.
I don't.
Do you have one for him?
No, I don't have one for him.
You don't have? Has he been asking?
My focus
him?
Is with the staff we have right now.
How's it been?
He's texting you. He's listening to us right now and text you that.
Yeah. I mean, the man, he really extended his career far beyond what it should have been.
Absolutely.
Oh, am I right about
I always
that?
Tell guys.
Like, he was like done in Miami or New Orleans.
You know the thing? Like, the further you get away from your career, like the stories you hear about some guys, oh, this guy was so smart. This guy made all the plays, impact players. Same with myself. It's like, I hear people talk about me. I was like, oh, I was good. I wasn't that good.
You weren't that good. Speaking of coaches, I'm interested. How's Hightower been? What's it been like to work with him, a guy that did make all the plays?
Yeah. I like that. I'm going to chirp you at some point. It's been great. It's been a great learning experience. And I see him going through the same things I went through from a player becoming, you know, then having your own room. And one of those is, look, we're out here to win games. And we're not out here, we are family, we are friends. But, you know, we talk about we're family. I can't fire my daughter or my son or anything like that. But in this world, I think he's doing a good job and he's coaching his tail off.
All right, Coach. Thank you.
Thank you.
Back at it. Enjoy the bye, but it sounds like you're working the whole entire time. All right. Conversation with the Coach is brought to you by Cross Insurance. Cross Insurance, official insurance broker of the New England Patriots. We'll be right back.
It really was heartbreaking yesterday. Like, that poor little fella.
The guy's doing everything he can.
Our beautiful, beautiful boy.
He's doing all he can. You don't want to break him. I was wondering, I don't think he'll get to this point, but it's the first time it crossed my mind. He doesn't feel like the type, but will he demand a trade? Will this offseason, Drake May say, I need to go somewhere else?
I'd start with demanding the coaches fired. That's where I'd start. But if you want to get to demand a trade, like, I think the playbook goes, get the coach fired. Maybe even get like a second coach fired.
Mac Jones tried that, though. I don't know if you wanted to go that route. I don't know if you want to run up the back stairs.
Okay, but
although you probably have more of a ground to stand
on. That's the traditional playbook for the disgruntled player.
Coach fired.
Fire the coach. Get me a coach I like. Maybe fire that coach, or then maybe you demand a trade right there.
I think receiver.
There's a process to this.
All right, okay. But I was thinking about it. Like, watching him play yesterday, like, guys dropping passes. You got the defense can't stop a nosebleed. And then you have him trying to make every play possible. And then he has to watch on the sideline as Anthony freaking Richardson marches down the field and beats him. You're like, oh, my God.
So
can't beat the Colts. What are you going to do?
With Drake May yesterday, you said it was arguably his best game.
Yeah.
I think it arguably was.
Yeah.
I thought the Rams game was really good from him. I would have this neck and neck with that.
Okay.
If you were going to force me to choose, I'd probably still lean in on the Rams game, just given the quality of opponent. But this was a really good game from him. You couldn't possibly look at both those quarterbacks yesterday and even have a decision.
Oh my God,
on who
close.
You take. I mean, I think the Colts have pretty decent talent around Richardson, and the Patriots have nothing around Drake May. So I think he was great yesterday, but they lose again. I don't think it's his fault, but they lose again. So I do have a couple of gripes about the game. One is on him and another is on coaching beyond just the general soft play calling, which we've been talking about.
Okay.
I'd like to see some more design runs for Drake May in the red zone. I heard Curran talking about this post game. We can ask him more about it tomorrow. But you suck in the red zone, maybe become a little more dynamic down there by using him and using his legs, because they are a weapon. They are a threat. 59 yards on 5 carries yesterday. Most of it came on one run.
Well, still.
But still, you saw what he can do.
We've seen it over the course of his time here. I mean, he's good for – he's already rushed for 345 yards this season.
It's crazy.
Right? And, like, he didn't play every game. So that would be a guy that would probably – I mean, what does that equal out to being? Would he be a guy that rushes consistently for, like, 600 yards?
Yeah, I mean, that's what Cam used to do. Cam used to be 600, 700, 800 yards every single year. Yeah. And that – I mean, could he do that? Yeah, I think he could do that,
sure,
to be honest. And I'm talking about in his prime Cam, not Patriots Cam.
Right.
Maybe utilize him. I know the Wildcat play with Ramondre Stevenson scored a touchdown and got called back on the hold. Mm. But – why are you flexing him out wide? Why aren't you using him in the red zone as opposed to wasting him standing over by the sideline?
I wonder if there's a few more wrinkles off of that.
Maybe.
Like, I don't know. And you never know with Van Pelt, like, when they use stuff. And I don't know.
Might
like,
be giving them too much credit.
Well, they had, like, that cool hook and ladder play that they ran.
They did.
When they were getting blown out. Yep. And then they've had some creativity, like, mixed in where you're like, wait a minute, you have that? That's in the playbook? So then it just drives you more nuts that they didn't go for two against Tennessee when they had the opportunity to, because it's like they actually have some plays that they might be able to run. But I wonder if, you know, you at least put that on tape. And this is sort of like for the future. Like, oh, Drake May's not doing anything. Like, oh, now he is. Now you throw it to him, then he throws it again or whatever.
I mean, they're just
it's a long con, I guess.
Hopefully that's going to pay off soon. My gripe for May on
the field. They pulled within 20 from the Bills for that play.
My gripe for May on the field. And I don't know if this is, again, the offense, the lack of receivers. I wish you would push the ball down the field a little bit more.
So I wonder how much of that is the receivers.
It might be. I'm just telling you, that's something that I thought, especially after the first Houston game, his first start. I thought we would get a little more of that in this offense. Every week I feel like there's not as much pushing the ball downfield as I would hope.
So I think part of that, you go a couple games ago, he looks at it, oh, here's a cover two, I'm going to chuck it down the field, Pop Douglas runs the wrong route, interception.
Yeah.
So that's got to weigh in on you. Even more than like taking a sack, it's like, all right, do I trust my receiver to run the right route and like go to the right place? And then even if I do, how many burners are on the team? Zero. How many contested catch guys are on the team? Zero. So, yeah, I'm with you. Overall, I'd like to see him get it downfield a little bit more. I mean, Kayshon Booty's first like really big play with the team was that, even though I don't think he's great by any means. But maybe you'd want to see it. But that is one of those things where I wonder, do you get like mixed results with it just based on the personnel?
Maybe. And look, maybe it's the play calling. Maybe it's the personnel. Yeah. Maybe Drake May is just a little cautious because of the turnovers. Fine. The other thing. Anthony Richardson has two comeback wins. As bad as he is, and he is bad, trust me, I liked him coming out in the draft. He was the original member of Team Feet for me. I'm like, accuracy is overrated.
Wow.
It's overrated, but you got to be able to complete some passes.
You
got to
be within like the building here.
So, look, Richardson has two comeback wins in the last 3 weeks. He played really well against the Jets. He threw together a good drive yesterday against the Patriots. Drake May does not have one of those. Drake May had an opportunity, and I'll blame play calling, but he also had opportunities. After the Christian Gonzalez pick to salt that game away, he did not. They go 3-and-out on that one drive. So I still want to see a little bit more out of him in crunch time. Again, you'd be insane to look at it and say, I'll take Richardson over Drake May.
Yeah.
But Richardson does have a couple of comeback wins just in the last few weeks. We're still waiting on May to win these games. And they're all winnable. They're all one possession winnable games, and he doesn't win them.
And yet another reason why that Tennessee decision like haunts me, and I'm sure maybe even Drake May and like plenty of other Patriots fans, because that could have been the difference. Like if the Indianapolis Colts yesterday just decided to kick the extra point 50-50, the way that game was going, 50-50.
Yeah, they probably still win, but you take any question out of it.
And then who knows? Then maybe the Patriots somehow, some way pull out an overtime win, and now it's like, hey, that was a good final drive by Richardson, but it's not a game-winning drive. Whereas if Drake May, if they allow him to go for two against the Tennessee Titans, we are looking back on it and saying, hey, that was a big-time win. That was like a must-have 2 yards. They got it. And now you put, you know, fourth-quarter comeback, game-winning drive, all that stuff. You could check that off. Whereas right now, you don't. You have the Bears win, which you kind of dominated that game wire-to-wire. The Bears fire their offensive coordinator after that. And then just a bunch of losses for Drake May.
617-779-7937. You can jump in here on Jones and Keefe. Open lines all day long to talk about the Patriots' 25-24 loss in heartbreaking fashion yesterday to the Indianapolis Colts. We'll go around the NFL about a half an hour from now. What happened? Take you back through week 13. And on the way next, do the Patriots have an identity? What is the Patriots' identity? Next.
WEEI Afternoons, Christian Arkin, Andy Hart, nice to have you with us today. We're joined on the phone right now by ESPN's Adam Schefter. He's brought to you by Liberty Bank and by Coleman. It's electric. Mr. Schefter, how are we doing today?
Gentlemen, how are we doing today? Hope everybody had a good Thanksgiving.
Same to you, sir. Hope it was a good Thanksgiving for you. I know it was not a good Thanksgiving for Trevor Lawrence, who got his bell rung there in that game with the Houston Texans. A lot has been made about sliding. I know Tom Brady's weighed in on it. A lot of guys weighing in on this. Where do you stand, Adam, on the suspension? We know it's getting appealed. Is this something that you think is going to be a big fundamental change, one of these things that starts getting emphasized next season and is looking very different in the future? Do you think that that's coming up here with the slides?
I don't see the league's emphasis on trying to protect quarterbacks changing. So they're not going to give the benefit of the doubt to defensive players. They're going to continue to side to protecting quarterbacks. Quarterbacks are currency. Quarterbacks bring ratings. And there have been too many owners who have said in the past that when the quarterbacks go down and teams are compromised and the ratings suffer, and when the ratings suffer, then the bottom line suffers. And so they're going to do, the league is going to do what it can, I believe, to always protect quarterbacks. So I don't see like they're going to say, oh, you can't slide or you have to slide sooner or declare. Whatever rule they want to put into that is not going to change the fact that quarterbacks are going to be offered rightfully in this day and age as much protection as they can get.
Speaking of quarterbacks, I think we talked to you, Adam, the week that Bryce Young was benched, and you said you thought he might have played his last game in Carolina. Now, a lot has happened since then. He's gotten back on the field. He had his little rest, and now he looks pretty good. Has he changed maybe the plan for his future in Carolina with the way he's played lately?
I think it's a really interesting question. I think at that time I said if you went and looked at it, maybe that was Richardson, they blend together. Quarterbacks picked that high, first-round picks who are benched, typically have not gone on to thrive with those respective teams.
Right.
That has been the overwhelming history. Bryce Young has played well the last couple of weeks, and he looks like a little bit of a different quarterback. And that's great. It's encouraging to see, and I think that they hope he could continue that. And I think it was in their mind, okay, we've got to go get a quarterback. And I think now the remaining weeks of this season are going to be used as a little bit an audition. Hey, did we find what we initially thought we had in this guy to where we think we could stick with him and not have to go draft a quarterback this offseason or not have to use a high pick on a quarterback this season? So I think he's begun to change the narrative, and now let's see if he can continue to change the narrative for the remainder of the season.
Schefter, one thing that's keeping us Patriots fans warm at night here is the fact that the New York Jets basically have the same record, and they have it while having much higher expectations than, obviously, the Patriots have. What's going on with Aaron Rodgers? What do you think his future is going to be there in New York? Is he going to finish this season, and is he going to play the rest of these games, and what do you think happens with him next year?
Well, I think that he and the Jets each have to make a decision, and I think that each of their decisions probably will not involve the other, would be my initial guess. The Jets are going to have a new GM, a new head coach. I don't know that the new GM and new head coach are going to have any ties or allegiance to Aaron Rodgers, and if they don't, I don't know that they're going to want to start to build their program around a 41-year-old quarterback with a stronger personality. So there's that element. And then there's the element of him being 41 and him, does he want to even go play there next year for a new GM and a new coach? And I don't know that he will. I would think that he'd want to be with somebody that he's comfortable with if he even wants to play. So, I mean, there are so many questions that have to be answered there that it's just logical and common sense to think that the chances are he's not going to be there. Now, let's see how it all plays out. Let's see who's hired as the GM and the head coach. Let's see what he decides. But there are a whole lot of variables that would have to fall into place for him to be there again next year. Not to say it can't happen. It always could. But, again, there's a lot that would have to happen to make that happen.
The Patriots unveiled sort of the photos or whatever of a new training facility today that they're building in Foxborough. I'm wondering, coming off of a couple years of bad NFLPA surveys, this seems obviously like a bit of a reaction to that, but does something like this matter for a team that's about to go out with $100 and whatever million in free agency spending this offseason? Does this help recruit players, or is it really just all about the money and this is sort of very much secondary to that?
Well, I think, when is the new complex supposed to be completed by?
That's a good question, Adam.
Do we know?
26, because, so a year
next
plus.
Year.
Yeah. Well, my guess would be that free agents in 25, so that thing is not going to be open for the 25 season, right?
No.
That's the assumption that we're making here. I'm going to guess that free agents in 25 aren't going to say, well, I'm going to go to New England because they're opening a new training facility in 26. Like, I don't think that's going to matter very much.
Okay.
Now, when free agency rolls around in 26 and this new facility is open and they have a guy that's coming to town to visit and that guy's also considering two or three other teams and they walk him in and they say, hey, this is where it would be, and the money's similar, if he wants to be there, something like that, I think could have an influence and could matter. Is it going to matter in this upcoming free agent class? No, I don't believe it will. Could it help sway a particular person's decision in 26 if and when they get him in on a visit and they see how beautiful it is, which I'm sure it's going to be state of the art? You know, hey, this is not a bad place to have to spend my season and work out during the day and whatnot. So, yeah, I think that that could make a little bit of a difference, but it's not going to be like, wow, I know that I'm being offered $10 million with the Jets and $9 million with the Patriots, and I could train here at this facility. That's not going to do it. Like, is the money being comparable? Yes. That could be a tiebreaker.
Speaking of the Patriots and where their money comes from, this is old news now, Adam, but we didn't get to talk to you about it, I think, because we were too busy asking you about your sex life 2 weeks ago. But Robert Kraft passed over once again for the Hall of Fame. I know this is something you feel very strongly about, that he should be in. I guess at this point the question is he ever going to get in? If he can't get in over Ralph Hay, is he ever going to get in?
Yeah, he's going to get in. I believe he's going to get in. And I believe that, I mean, you know, I was on the phone this morning with an executive on another team, and we were, and that this actual topic came up, and he brought up Robert Kraft. And we discussed it. First of all, we're talking about as much of a dynasty as there's been in football. Correct me if I'm wrong. Was he not the owner of the team that had that dynasty? He was. Mm-hmm. Has he not been incredibly influential with how the league has done its broadcast deals and the way games are yes, he has. Did he not spearhead an effort to completely revitalize that Foxborough area that was defunct until he owned the team? Yes, he has. Is he not? I mean, what are we talking about here? Like, it's absurd. So let's make him just keep
Adam,
waiting.
I agree with you. I mean, listen, I agree with everything you're saying here, but if they're going to put Ralph Hay in ahead of him, aren't they just going to find someone else more popular than Ralph Hay every year? I mean, right? Can't they beat Ralph Hay every year if they can beat Robert Kraft?
Yeah, I know people were knocking down the doors to get Ralph Hay in. I know there have been
80 years of it.
For Ralph Hay. Yeah. Ralph, you know, and that's what I was thinking. Ralph Hay's time has come.
Right. Yeah, it was in the forefront of all of our minds. All right, well, there you go. Adam Schefter, ESPN, thanks so much for the time today. We always love talking with you.
Thanks, Adam.
Have a great week. We'll talk next week.
All right, that is the great Adam Schefter, ESPN, joining us here on WEEI Afternoons. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Normally, at 4 o'clock, we talk with Brian Scalabrine. He is pushed back to 445. So, instead, we are going to reset on some of the latest news here with Juan Soto and the Boston Red Sox, because starting to heat up a little bit. Some teams may be dropping out here very soon. And one thing that everybody agrees on is that he's going to make a decision sometime in the next 7 days. The winter meetings begin on the 11th, and everyone, every reporter in the world, so you know Boris is saying this, is saying that there will be a decision and a signing made before then. Hey, could even happen today. We'll get to all of that next.